Today on Barca Talk, FC Barcelona had a day of debuts in a scoreless draw with Huesca, while they got a so-so result in Manchester in the first leg of the Champions League quarterfinal. FC Barcelona B lent several players to the Huesca match, but also had a 3-2 win of their own over Levante in Segunda B. And Valverde has spoken out about Umtiti. He'll have to work hard to reclaim a spot in the starting lineup. First, a little bit of news. Diego Costa's red card at Camp Nou against Barcelona last Saturday could end up costing the Atletico Madrid forward dearly. According to COPE and Radio Marca, the competition committee will come down hard on Costa. He received 4 for the insult and another 4 for grabbing referee Manzano. The question in the Spanish capital is, has Costa played his last game with Atletico? Since coming back to Atletico, he has had more cards than goals. The Barcelona Foundation are running a program in the Bekaa Valley, Lebanon, which was featured recently by Suzanne Rack writing for The Guardian. The Foundation's main goal with this program is not to find the next Middle Eastern Lionel Messi. Rather, it's about the social power of football and its ability to smash down the barriers society constructs between people and cultures. And we highly urge you to read this article that highlights this power of football and how it is helping to create opportunities for refugee children. Barcelona president Josep Maria Bartomeu has told ESPN FC in an exclusive interview that he wants Messi to remain linked to the club forever and that he plans to sit down with the forward soon to discuss extending his contract. The Argentina international is showing no signs of slowing down on the pitch. He has already scored 42 goals in all competitions this season, and Bartomeu is already thinking it would be his 10th and potentially last professional deal at Camp Nou. Bartomeu said, "We want him to have a really long career so we can keep on enjoying him. And Lionel's managed to break down borders. Everyone admires him, and he's applauded at other stadiums by rival fans. At Barca Talk, we hope he stays at the club and is a lifer." Barca coach Ernesto Valverde addressed the situation of French defender Samuel Umtiti on Friday. Valverde said, "I think he's doing fine. He's been out of action for a long time, and the defensive line is playing at a really high level. What Umtiti has to do is work hard and focus on getting back to his best. He's keen to contribute, though opportunities for Umtiti to play have been few and far between since being sidelined by a knee injury." More on that in a moment. All right, this is Barca Talk, back to normal operating procedure. I'm Brian Henderson, back in Buffalo, New York. And joining me, as always, is Gabriel Quiroga in Madrid.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. How are we doing, buddy? You back to normal there in Buffalo?
I'm back in my normal place. I'm physically, but I'm not sure if my brain is quite back. We got to, we spent about 18 hours traveling from Madrid back to New York, and then we spent the weekend in New York City visiting with some friends, and that helped us to readjust a little bit, but As you do in New York City, a friend of mine was playing a show last night. They went on around 10, so I went to go see the show, and then that was way down on the Lower East Side, and we were staying with a friend of Megan's who lives in Washington Heights, which is on the complete other end of Manhattan. And so it was late, and we took the subway, and it just took a really long time for us to get there. We were each falling asleep on the train, which is not a good idea. But we got home, we got a few hours of sleep, and now we're back in Buffalo. You know, Buffalo does not disappoint, man. It is gloomy and rainy and cold. So I'm back, and I have my stuff, which is nice. I'm back with my nice microphone and in my comfort zone. But yeah, my brain is still readjusting. How are you?
I'm good, man. We kind of had the opposite here. We had a really nice day here in Madrid, not to rub it in. And, obviously, I mean, last weekend was just a whirlwind, you know, especially with the game, the party, the live show and everything. But it was fantastic. As I was commentating with another friend of mine, it was just amazing to meet so many people from all over the world. And FC Barcelona was the connection. And just listening to people's stories of how they became fans or their first game at the Camp Nou, I just couldn't get enough of it. It was just awesome to meet everyone. I mean, we met people from Baghdad, from South America, you know, obviously in Los Angeles, other places in the United States, New York, Texas,
Lyon,
France, and so forth. And it was just an amazing weekend, Brian. And obviously it was great to meet you finally in person. And obviously we got the victory. So, you know, what could you say about that weekend? Yeah.
Oh, it was great. Megan asked me a couple of times, like, was it weird to finally meet Gabriel? And I just said, well, no, not really, because I know you. We talk all the time. It's the only thing that's different is that we were in the same actual physical space. But the one thing I learned about you that I didn't know before was this one little detail, and I told you this, is that I didn't realize what beautiful hazel eyes you had. Because on the video conference that we see it, we don't have that much detail. But apart from that, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Gabriel. Like, we're hanging out now.
Yeah, I mean, right, it took us maybe like, what, 1 or 2 minutes to kind of figure out the things, and then we just kind of went right into the normal routine that we normally do. And, you know, I really had a lot of fun recording live, and obviously we did the bonus episode this past week in my cozy apartment in Madrid, so that was a lot of fun as well. And of course, you know, we just got to plan more trips in the future. That's basically the, you know, what we got to do.
Yeah, and let me tell the listeners, we really need to get Gabriel some art to put on his walls in his living room particularly. I didn't get a good look at the bedroom, but the living room is, it has very nice white walls, and that's all you can see.
Well, you know why this is, Brian? It's because I've been such a nomad for the last 5 years.
Right.
This is part of the problem, right? And so now that I actually have roots now, I mean, this is on my list of things to do. And hopefully the next time I'll have art. So the art will come sooner than later. It's just, it's kind of like a psychological thing, Brian. Like, I've been a nomad for so long, and now that I've actually got my residency here in Spain, that kind of has clicked. And now I'm actually starting to, you know, I'll build roots here in my apartment.
Yeah. And I have a recommendation, like, maybe if you got some nice tapestries, some like soft kind of material, but that's artistic, to hang on your walls, it would look good. It would dress up the place nicely, and it would also help with the sound, because your living room has a lot of echo in it. I got in there, I snapped my fingers, and I heard it reverberate for an extra minute.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing, right? The artwork would help with the sound, obviously.
Just soak up a little bit of that.
Yeah, of course. But you know, first things first, Brian. I gotta get some other things first before I get the artwork. But it'll come. Sure. It will come soon.
It goes in steps. I understand. Well, so this one news item that we had at the top of the show we wanted to talk about is about Umtiti and what Valverde had to say about him, because he's run into some bad luck, because as Valverde said, it was cited in this Sport article, he said the defensive line is playing extremely well, and he's referring to mainly Piqué and Longley. They've been playing well, and Umtiti is now a backup center back. So we have an embarrassment of riches, really, with center backs if Umtiti is a backup. But it looks as though Umtiti is going to be limited for the rest of the year, because we know how Valverde is. He wants to ride the hot hand. He likes how Piqué and Longley are working together. He likes that choice. So he's said that Umtiti is going to have to work really hard if he wants to get back into a starting lineup. And then, more importantly, this summer, the talk about De Ligt is heating up that much more. So the question arises, will FCB sell Umtiti and make money off of him and keep Longley as a cheaper alternative, especially since he's shown that he can play at a high level?
This is quite a quandary.
Right?
Because, you know my love for Umtiti.
Yeah.
I love this guy. He is so good as a center back, but you know, at the same time, you got to be financially, you know, responsible with these signings. I think for me, the biggest kind of wrench into this is the De Ligt thing, because if that signing happens, then I could totally see Barcelona selling Umtiti just because of the cost that they can get for him in return, right? And then keeping Longley, Piqué, and De Ligt as the three major center backs. But again, I hope that they can come to an agreement. I just, you know, Umtiti has been working hard. You know, we've chronicled his injuries this year, and, you know, we wanted him to have surgery so that he can be completely healthy for the summer. Again, we saw his debut against Villarreal, which was kind of a nightmare. And also, you know, he played against Huesca. He looked fine there. So again, he's coming back slowly, but as we've talked about, Valverde is just going to ride Longley and Piqué for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, because that's his way. And so it's just a real shame with the injury troubles that Umtiti has had this year, because he's so great. And it's a bummer that just something like that could essentially take him out of the squad entirely or out of the club entirely. Because someone at his quality, you would want to hold on to him. Not just his quality, but, I mean, he's so big and yet intelligent. And, you know, he's physical, but he's smart. You know, he's not some bruiser. He's neither Piqué nor Longley. He has these attributes that are unique and unexpected. And it would be a shame to lose him, but you could see how he's probably pretty expensive. Longley, we got on the cheap. We can get De Ligt pretty cheap. Piqué is Piqué. You know, that's especially if the De Ligt deal goes through, I think it's almost certain that Umtiti will go somewhere else and he'll probably have a great career there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that kind of confuses me is that do we really need De Ligt? You know, do we really need him? I mean, he is a hot prospect. He's super young, but again, Umtiti's 25. So he still has playing to give FC Barcelona at the cost and the potential he has. Now, I know there's the injury scare, but again, of what I saw with Murillo and Todibo, I still think we have an embarrassment of riches with the center backs position that we don't really need to go after De Ligt. I know that's a really, I don't know, many Kool-Aids want that, but to me, I just feel that we already have that settled, that we have no reason to get it. Are we just getting him just to have, you know, other teams not get him? You know, for example, Real Madrid and so forth. Is that really the aim of just getting him, right? Because, again, De Ligt is 19. Where is he going to fit? Do you knock him out for Longley or Umtiti if they're fully healthy? I wouldn't.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, speaking of riding the hot hand, I mean, if you want to keep going with what's working. Well, the other thing to consider is, let's say we take Piqué out of the equation because, you know, give it another year, maybe another 2 years, maybe even another three. But, you know, Piqué is nearing the end of his career. That's
sure.
There's no doubt about that just because of his age. Like I said, it could be 1, 2, maybe 3 years. But, you know, of course, the club needs to be thinking about the future in that position. And I do think that I think Todibo is looking really good. So I think he's one to hold on to, and we already have him. So do we need to go out of our way to get De Ligt when we already have Todibo, Longley, Murillo as backup? And who else?
Vermaelen. Just kidding.
No. I mean, in that case, I mean, because you should have four.
Yeah, that's all you really need, four. And if you really want to play it, save five.
Right.
But again, you know, remember in the beginning of the year, we were in desperate need of center backs with injuries, but then we were able to ride it out and we were fine. Again, I think four is an optimal number. And like you said, if we're going to take Piqué out, I'm perfectly happy with Umtiti and Longley as being the future center back pairing for a long time to come. That's why, you know, with this De Ligt rumors, yeah, it's very nice to have it. But if we had an absolute need, and maybe let's say if Longley wasn't having the season that he's having, or as we're seeing how good he is as a defensive back, then I would say yes, bring in De Ligt because we need to improve that position. It's not like when we had Mathieu, remember? Mm-hmm. You know, when he was playing for us, he was okay against lower tier teams, but against upper tier teams, he struggled. And that was an absolute need where we needed to address that. And that's when we got Umtiti, right? With our defensive backs right now, it is something that is very hard to do, Brian, in most world football, because just to have one awesome center back is really nice. To have two or three is crazy. You know, think about all the teams just in La Liga. You know, I can't think of any other teams that have really great center backs, you know, obviously outside of Atletico Madrid, for example, but, you know, that are potential young, you know, well-founded in their, you know, tactics and principles like Umtiti, Longley, Piqué, you know, for example. I mean, Umtiti is a World Cup winner. You know, he's played a lot of matches. He already has a lot of experience for just being 25. As you know, last season, I fell in love with the way he was able to defend, and obviously from defending to pass the ball to the midfield. So I would just kind of wait for Umtiti, and I would hold off on the De Ligt signing. That's what I would do personally if I were in charge of the signings.
Sure, sure. No, I get that. And I don't really have an argument against it. But I do know that sometimes the club will make certain decisions partially for public relations reasons. You know, it looks like a good signing. We get these two players from Ajax. They're both young. They know each other, so trying to create this connection, there's sort of a story there that you can market. That's the only other thing I can think of as to why they would be so gung-ho about it.
Sure. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like you said, it's a PR splash. It's a great signing. again, I just don't think we need it. We already have De Jong, so just bring him in. I would hold off on De Ligt because I just don't think there's a need. We can focus that money on something else or just save it, you know?
Right.
If we sell Coutinho or something, we get even more money from that. So we will see. You know, obviously, I don't think they're going to sell Coutinho, but, you know, you have other needs that we can address and still use the same formula that we use this offseason by getting players that have potential that aren't so expensive that'll find time on our team and actually contribute.
Yeah, that's all we need is good contributions. We saw a couple Barca B starlets in action this weekend in La Liga. Here with some insight into those performances and an update on the B team is Max Bleuer.
What a weekend for the B team it's been. We'll start today's roundup in Huesca, Aragon, where the first team had an admittedly uninspiring 0-0 draw with bottom-placed SD Huesca. Excitingly, though, Riqui Puig and Moussa Wage made their La Liga debuts for the first team, while Abel Ruiz made the bench for the first time. Unsurprisingly, our boys started off a bit nervously. Valverde acknowledged as much after the game, but very much grew into the contest. Carles Elanya played the 90 minutes, but was disappointing. He was uninvolved for large stretches of the game and missed a couple of presentable half-chances. At least, though, he was getting forward from midfield and supporting the strikers, a key part of his game, bearing in mind the potency of his shooting. But Carles was outshone in midfield by his partner Riqui Puig, who was the source of most of the spark and invention in what was otherwise quite an attritional game. His highlight came in the 15th minute with a classic Riqui move. Putting into practice one of my favourite Spanish football phrases, he showed off his elastic ankle, i.e. twisting it almost 90 degrees, to deliver a stunning disguised pass that put Ousmane Dembélé through on goal, a chance that the Frenchman really should have put away. Despite his youth, it was Riqui who was always showing for the ball and progressing the play forward, showing up Alanya a little bit in the process. He also demonstrated a facet to his game that we don't get to see very often. Picking up the ball on the edge of his own area, he zoomed upfield, leaving several Huesca players trailing in his wake, showing a turn of acceleration that will stand him in very good stead in the future. Riqui faded after half-time. The physicality was much greater than what he's used to, and midway through the second half was replaced by Coutinho, who shockingly did absolutely nothing. But Ricky's 6-7 minutes on the pitch were as bright and sparky as you would expect, and left Koulé's appetites whetted for much more next season. Unlike Riqui, Moussa Wage played the entire 90 minutes. Although he didn't start well, by the end he was bombing up and down the touchline, delivering dangerous crosses, playing 1-2 with Alenia, and generally looking the part. It would not at all be a surprise if we were promoted to the first team squad next season, possibly allowing Sergio Roberto to finally establish himself in midfield. Valverde did well by the youngsters by switching to a 3-5-2 formation. By putting Wage at right wing back, rather than his usual fullback position, he ensured that the Senegalese had another line of defence behind him should he be caught upfield. That insurance seemed to allow Wage to play with more freedom than he otherwise might have on debut. He constantly supported the attack, safe in the knowledge that a centre-back was behind him if anything went wrong. And that's not to say that he didn't defend very well. Very few Huesca chances came from his side, and in the 86th minute, a brilliant last-minute tackle denied Chemi Avila a 1-on-1 against Ter Stegen. The 3-5-2 also benefited Riqui in the same way. With one more defender behind him than he would normally have in Barca's classic 4-3-3, he could afford to focus more on what he does best and leave a little more of the defending to the guys behind him. When Barca announced their 18-man squad the day before the game, in amongst the plaudits for Valverde for being brave enough to play so many youngsters, many wondered why the likes of Miranda and Oriol Busquets were not called up too, especially as Jordi Albert really could have done with the rest. Although it would have been fun to see Miranda bombing up the left-hand side, mirroring Wage on the right just as he does at the Minas Stadium, it seems that Coach Pimi and Valverde have agreed that after his terrible performance in the Copa earlier in the season against Cultural Leonesa, Miranda shouldn't play again with the first team this year. And this makes sense. Everyone at the club agrees that Miranda has a bright future with Barca, but he's only 19 and there's no need to rush him. Another bad performance with the first team could prove catastrophic for his confidence. Better then to ease him in pre-season in the summer so that he'll be ready to play a part in next year's first team campaign. And it shouldn't be forgotten that the B team needs some players too. Miranda and captain Oriol Busquets played the 90 minutes in a dramatic 3-2 win over Levante B. It came straight after the first team game and more than made up for the lack of goals in Huesca. A madcap first half that features some hopeless defending from both sides saw the scores locked at 2-2, with Rafa Mujica and Carles Perez getting the goals for Barça B. The second half was a torrid affair that seemed to be drifting to a draw until Mavels popped up in the 81st minute to ping home across from Miranda, who made up for the fact that both Levante goals came from his side by providing the assist for the winner. Thanks to Villarreal B and Coruña both losing, Barça B are currently in fifth, just one spot and 2 points off the playoff places. Their next game will be away next week to Valencia B.
That was Max Bleuer. And now it's time for the Barça Talk Guard of Honor. This week, we're giving the Guard of Honor to Victor in Houston. Victor, of course, is a longtime friend and supporter of the show on Patreon. In fact, he has just persuaded us to give supporters at the $3 a month level access to our weekly bonus episodes every other week. Previously, it was restricted. You didn't get any of those at the $3 a month level, but now you do, thanks to Victor. He's also the man leading the charge in our annual Barcelona Soccer Camp fundraiser. We are painfully close to our fundraising goal, only $40 away. So follow the FCB Camp link in the show notes and give a few bucks to send some kids to Barça Camp this summer in Houston. And a big thanks to Victor for both his support of the show and for spearheading that project. And you should support the show on Patreon too. There's this one thing that you should know. There's a podcast, not unlike ours, that covers Real Madrid called Managing Madrid. And those guys have almost 600 patrons. We currently only have 19.
Brian, I don't know if you know this about me, but when I play sports, I'm ultra competitive in a good way.
I can imagine. I can imagine.
In a healthy way.
Yeah.
And basically what Brian and I are saying is, you know, don't let this Real Madrid podcast beat ours. You know, help us grow our Patreon community. We are looking to expand and do amazing things. We want to get more Barca access. We want to go to more games. But by contributing to our Patreon community, we will be able to achieve those goals in the upcoming year.
Yeah, and just don't let the Real Madrid podcast do better than the Barcelona podcast.
It's science.
It's just science. Hashtag don't let RM beat us.
That's right. We're starting a new hashtag with our Twitter. Don't let RM beat us. So spread the word. Help us grow our Patreon community so that we can ultimately make this podcast even better than it is now, get more Barca access, and so forth.
Yes. Now, another way you can help support the show is through our Amazon marketplace. We have links to these products on the website, barcatalk.net, in the notes for a particular episode. So you have to kind of click on the name of the episode and then go down, and you can find links for these particular products. And any purchase you make through those links will funnel a couple of euro cents or pesetas our way. So this week I chose an item. It's a hoodie, and it's not an officially licensed Barca hoodie, but it does have a mostly a Barcelona crest on it, but some of the stuff is messed with, so I don't know if it's I don't know how official it is, but there's kind of a Barca crest, and then there's a 10 with an M on it, so it's a messy hoodie, but it's actually a pretty sick design. I'm into it, and it's under $30. It looks warm, and it's a cool design. It's like red on black. So that's my item for this week.
I like your item. I checked it out. Looks pretty nice.
Like you would wear that.
Yeah, I would definitely wear it. Mine is a Nike FC Barcelona warm-up pants. So
I would wear that.
Yeah, when I first moved here to Madrid, I bought some because I didn't have any to, you know, when I went to go play football or to go running. And what I like about these type of pants is they're kind of tapered down through the calf into your ankles. So, for example, if you're playing football, it's not loose and it's kind of tight. And you see the players wear it all the time, which is nice and comfortable. Obviously, it's perfect to lounge around. I still have mine. It's my favorite kind of sleepwear. And so that's the item I picked. I think they're really good for anybody that is active, still playing football, or wants to run outside because of the way they're tapered down. It's a nice, comfortable feeling for those pants.
Yeah, two really nice pieces of apparel that we have curated for you. So if you're interested in either of those products, find the links in the notes for the episode on the website at barcatalk.net. Now let's look at La Liga. We're going to go sort of backwards chronologically because the Saturday match against Huesca was not exactly what I would call a main event topic for this show. But of course, there are certainly some things to talk about with it. So we went to Huesca, played at the El Alcoraz. It was match day 32 in La Liga. The result was a 0-0 draw. So the race for La Liga is going well after beating Atletico, all but clinching the championship. And this match day 32 presented an opportunity for Valverde to rest his key players ahead of the second leg of Champions League quarterfinals with Manchester United. And the squad list was missing some big names, missing Pique and Suarez to suspension, Rakitic and Sergio Roberto to illness and injury, and finally, just at his own decision, in his wisdom, Valverde left out Messi and Busquets. So it was mostly an opportunity for bench players and B-team players to get some first-team minutes, ending in that 0-0 draw. And for instance, the way that Max detailed already, Wague and Ricky Puig had their La Liga debuts in this match. But also, there were two more debuts for first-team players, Todibo and Murillo. And that's in La Liga, because until this point, they had only played in Copa del Rey and in the Catalonia Super Cup up to this point. Now, with the formation the way it was, the way I saw it, it looked as though there was more width, because that's the thing that you are always talking about, Gabriel, is our lack of width, particularly on the right side. And with this particular lineup, where we had a five-person midfield, Ricky Puig, Wague, Malcolm, Vidal, Alenia, and then Prince and Dembele up top, I was seeing more width, particularly because of Malcolm, Dembele, and Wague spreading the defense out in both directions and then just leaving Prince there in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw this lineup, I was super excited. I mean, Twitter was on fire, Brian, when this lineup came out, because everyone knew, you know, it was Barca B debuts, and obviously just to kind of change it up as well, you know, giving the starters a rest going through this game. But yeah, just like you described it, you know, on the TV screen that I was watching, they said 3-5-2. On the Who Scored, they said 3-1-4-2. I kind of believe more was a 3-1-4-2 because Vidal was back there, kind of in that old Mascherano role, you know, right in front of the three backs kind of a thing. So
right.
Like you said, though, the width was the difference. And I knew we were going to have more, not more attacking, but we were going to use both sides because we had no preference, especially with Messi being gone. And that's exactly what happened. You know, Wagu was on the right wing and Malcolm was on the left. And both of them created not only width, but they also expanded all the way up to the top as well. So, you know, I thought it was a very interesting formation. You know, as we talked about always with rotation and so forth, you know, as I was talking to you earlier before, I was like, Valverde just loves doing things to extremes sometimes. You know, he's so conservative and extremely conservative. And then when he does rotation, he just brings everyone, you know, he brings all the Barca B players and so on. So
yeah, it's not like one click of rotation. It's like 180 degrees.
Exactly. But again, I was excited to see what they were going to be able to bring. And I knew it was going to be a little bit more direct attacking as opposed to the side to side that we saw against Manchester United. So for me, as just a pure football fan, I knew the game was going to be a little bit more end to end just because of the lack of Messi dependence and also having the speed all around the field.
Yeah. Now, as far as the debut players, Max already talked about Wague and Ricky Puig. And you have a couple of things to say, at least about Puig. But first, let's focus on Todibo and Murillo, particularly Todibo. But what do you think about them and how they were looking?
I mean, I have here in my notes, wow. When we saw the Barca B kind of lineup, heavy lineup, you know, you think about them being physically just smaller, like especially Ricky Puig and Alenia is getting bigger, but he's not quite there yet. He's still grown, you know, he's a 21-year-old guy, right?
Right.
Or 22, you know? But then when I saw Todibo and Murillo out there compared to the Huesca players, you're just kind of like, whoa, who are these guys? Because they really stood out on my TV. I don't know about you, but for me, just watching, especially Todibo, especially the way he moves, I mean, a couple times he was not even fazed by the wingback trying to make moves. I remember one time the wingback tried to make a cut in the middle and he just turned around and just glided back. I was like, whoa, that's impressive, because that's a really hard thing to do on defense. If you're going to get like used on that move and then recover just as quickly and still block the shot, for me, those are signs. And as I point out to Twitter, because I put the question out to Twitter, what did you think about their performances, Murillo and Todibo? Because maybe I'm overreacting because I just, you know, saw their performance and the way they shut things down. And people did agree with this. I mean, especially with the Todibo, especially the way he was able to link up with Wagu and also through Vidal. So I think that was really interesting to see, especially this was basically his first game with this team.
Yeah, yeah. It was very much his first game with this team. And I was also really taken by his speed and his positioning and the way he was turned, the way his body was pointing at all times. He really stood out as particularly considering his youth, as someone with a lot of potential and a very, very smart buy.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing too with Murillo, for example, when you saw the starting lineup, it's, you know, why wouldn't you have Umtiti in the center?
Right.
But Valverde went with Murillo, and I thought that was a really good call because, you know, as we talked about, Umtiti's left-footed, so that's just a better natural progression to have him on that left side. But again, with Murillo, he was a beast in the air. Nothing got cleared on the air. They were able to clear everything, especially when they're only three back. But for me, the stat that I have for you, Brian, is just, you know, between the two of those guys, they had five aerials, and they won all of them. And then more importantly, Todibo's tackles, he had eight attempted, eight completed.
Wow.
So that's just really a nice stat. I know stats aren't everything, but especially with this, his tackling, the way it was so timed. And he was just never fazed by the players of Huesca coming down that left side. I mean, he handled the high balls easy. He was physical when he had to be. He didn't create too many fouls. And again, just like the tackles, that's a really hard thing to do, especially, you know, he's never been playing against La Liga players yet. And just the way he was able to just fit right in. And I almost have this question for you. Out of the three now, Todibo, Semedo, Sergio Roberto, I know we just saw one game of Todibo, but that's going to put a monkey wrench into that rotation if Todibo continues to have performances like this.
Well,
with Sergio Roberto.
But Todibo is more a center back, or more of a central defender, or like a defensive midfielder rather than a wing back or fullback.
Could have fooled me yesterday.
Right? No, that's true. But I think generally he seems to be more comfortable in the center and working his way through. He does play really positively, and sometimes, even though he's nominally a center back, he looks more like a center mid with attacking ideas.
Yeah.
Which is really, really fun and cool to watch. But I don't think that the Semedo Sergio Roberto issue is going to be I don't think that's going to be complicated by Todibo.
Okay.
The bigger thing would be Wagwe next year.
That's true. But the other thing too is, you know, with the spacing of the three back, you know, Todibo had to cover a lot of space. When you have four back, he doesn't have to cover as much space, and he could even be more effective. Now, like you said, he is more, you know, his preferred position is in the center back or center defensive mid. But again, just his flexibility to play a right back and play it well, as he's played his whole life, it seemed like, that's something crazy, Brian, because that is such a hard thing to do, to transition from the middle to the right back and also just make it look so fluid. And for me, he was one of the defensive standouts for Barca yesterday.
Oh, absolutely. No, he stood out not only because eyes were on him, because it was, again, really his first actual competitive debut, because I don't think the Catalonia Super Cup really counts. It was his actual real, like, definitely his La Liga debut, obviously. So I think a lot of eyes were on him. Mine certainly were. And he did not disappoint. He really impressed. And he really let us know that he's here to play. Now, what did you think about Vidal?
Yeah, so I thought this was Vidal's best match as a Barca player, bar none, because this is the type of role that he is, you know, tailored to play, you know, to link the passing from the back to the attacking mids, be physical on defense, and just connect those things. You know, I mean, how many great tackles did he make yesterday? He made a lot of tackles, you know?
A lot of good tackles, yeah.
A lot of good tackles, because he was able to read. He was going forward to make the play, as opposed to going side to side or jumping in the air like he did against Manchester.
Right. Throwing himself at people.
I mean, he was basically playing, I mean, if you equate it to American football, for example, like free safety, where he was able to scan in front of him, read, and then react that way, as opposed to having his back turned, running with the player on defense. So when you have that type of positioning where you have, you know, all those four midfielders in front, it gives you a luxury where you can read and react. And Vidal's a smart player in that position. And for me, I had to do a double take a couple times because I thought it was Mascherano playing out there.
Yeah. Yeah. He had some Mascherano-esque moments. And as far as speaking of stats, he actually had a pretty good pass accuracy rate of 85%, and he made a total of 63 passes. There are some games where he doesn't come anywhere close to that.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, he just was platooned to not go so forward, you know? And also, just like I said, he was able to just kind of, as a free safety role, just react to the attacking that was coming up. So, you know, basically they were playing almost kind of like three and a half back there with Vidal. And Vidal is, when he's able to read those balls and make those tackles, he's a formidable defender. And Huesca had a hard time trying to penetrate that. Again, with those passing, I mean, I don't think we've seen total pass numbers like that all season for Vidal because, again, he was the link between, let's say, Todibo and Murillo to the midfielders, to Ricky Puig and Alenia.
Right. And if you're going to have three in the back, it's also nice to have a little bit of an insurance policy in a central mid who's a little bit more defensive and has that kind of presence like Vidal.
Exactly.
And who can also drop back and also become kind of an extra center back.
Exactly. So that's the thing is, you know, as I always talk about in professional sports, Brian, you got to put these players in the best, you know, spots to succeed. And it's funny how on Wednesday night, Vidal came in and he looked completely lost. Didn't even look like the same player that we saw yesterday. And that was just the amount of positioning and just using his skill set in the best way to make our defense. I mean, our defense looked solid as hell yesterday.
Yeah, best performance we've seen from Vidal, and that was nice. Now, one other thing, because Max mentioned Ricky Puig and his elastic ankle and that great pass he made to Dembele that Dembele definitely should have finished, and I'm a little disappointed, or actually very disappointed, that he didn't. But what else do you have? Can we say about Ricky Puig?
I mean, you can see why everyone's excited about him. You know, just his passing vision alone is something that gets you excited, especially on that play where he dimed Dembele. Dembele missed the shot that could have put us up 1-0. Again, you said that was a bad miss. It was a bad miss, but I just attribute that just to rust because that's just a game of inches. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So again, you can see the fanfare just because of the vision that he does, especially in attacking. He's already seen plays ahead of the time, faster when they develop. So, I mean, how can you not get excited? I mean, he has so much potential. And also, imagine if he's going to grow just a little bit more, just more physical. Wow, look out.
Yeah, we just need him to bulk up a little bit. Just get a little, just like, you know, a little more toned. Just a little.
Yeah, yeah. Need some more egg shakes or something, you know? Just some more raw eggs or something.
Something, yeah, because he's got the skill to absolutely mess with defenders, but if he stays at his current physical stature, well, not his stature, his height is not an issue, that's not a problem, but just his overall strength and his ability to withstand physical pressure from the other players, the bigger guys, you know, you can do that. I mean, Messi does that well, but Messi, if you look at him, he's ripped, you know?
Yeah.
He's really strong, and he can handle it, even though he's, what, 5'9", right?
Exactly.
So Ricky just needs to put on some weight, put on some muscle, and he is going to light this league on fire.
Exactly. The other thing, too, today, Brian, when I was watching the sports show, they were just basically, they had a split screen to plays where he did Iniesta-type plays, and then the other times when he did Xavi-type plays.
Aww.
So, yeah. So, you know, especially with the pirouette that he did, obviously that reminds you of Xavi, but then the passing vision is just like Iniesta. So it's almost a mixture of the both. But again, it's just nice to see the Masia DNA, right? I mean, you just see it. I mean, with him and Alenia too. I mean, I know Alenia didn't have the best game yesterday, but you can just see the positioning and the way they pass and give and go. It's just something that is just lovely to see.
Yes, very lovely. So those are definitely some highlights, despite the, you know, not great result, but not terrible result. But on the lower light end of things, in the darker end of the spectrum, what did you think about Kevin Prince Boateng?
So as I put in the notes here, this is my compliment sandwich, right? So the first couple things were nice things to say about the game. This is my kind of not so nice. I mean, Kevin Prince, I mean, what is this signing? I mean, this signing from the get-go, we were confused, but he has provided nothing. And in this match, again, he didn't do anything. Again, as we were talking about this earlier, you know, for me, it was just a brutal performance. He didn't provide anything. He didn't pass well. He looks super slow. He looks like he's been on vacation for the last 2 months, essentially. Maybe his positioning, sure, was okay. But every time he got fouled, he was always looking for the foul. He didn't have any shots, essentially. I mean, he was just out there basically occupying space. And I just think that this has been one of the worst FC Barcelona signings in the last 10 years, for sure.
It was certainly one of the most curious, because you're essentially getting a number nine, but mm-hmm. one who's already had a career, basically. You know, he's on the tail end, and he's just looking to extend his career as much as he can, you know, try and just play a little bit more, but he doesn't come to training. He rarely plays, and he knew that he was going to rarely play. So, I mean, I think he really just sees this gig as a paycheck. He's not really trying. He doesn't come to training. I mean, he comes to training when he's required to, but whenever they offer optional ones, we were talking about this during the international break, you know, they held optional training sessions, and Boateng didn't come to a single one. Meanwhile, Malcolm went to all of them.
Exactly. I mean, this is all about drive, right? I feel as though, yeah, like you said, he's kind of over the hill in football terms, you know? But again, I just feel like he hasn't had any international glory, right? He's never won a Champions League. He's won a couple of leagues, I believe, in Italy. But you're on Barcelona. Like, isn't this kind of like a dream come true? You should kind of take it. And wouldn't that be awesome to have some goals in your resume that you scored for Barcelona that were important? But again, especially on that Wagyu pass, I mean, he just looks so slow to react. His left foot barely got around to it. I mean, I just think it was such a waste of the sign. I would have preferred, especially like in this match, to either give Sergio Roberto a chance or put Coutinho in there. Or, you know, if we're talking about the Prince signing, signed a mid-tier La Liga striker number 9 and have him, he's probably going to have more drive than Kevin Prince.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure Ibars, you know, has someone who would be a little bit more excited to be at Barcelona than Boateng is.
No, I mean, you have a good point. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's all about opportunity and drive, so forth, you know. And again, I guess it just annoys me more because when I see, you know, players not taking their opportunities, especially when Malcolm, you hear what he's been doing and he's still not getting the opportunity from Valverde, it just kind of, it chaps my hide, Brian. It just chaps my hide.
Sure, you know? Sure. Well, okay, so to finish off the compliment sandwich, that was the meat, the not-so-great things. Let's close it out with the final compliment.
Sure. I mean, speed kills, right?
Doesn't
I mean,
it?
Oh, man, it's, the thing is,
slow,
you know,
down
when you see,
and live.
Yeah, when you when you see Dembele out there, man, it is good to have him back, man. He's so fast, man. He just puts that defense on ice skates. I mean, how many times did he almost break through? I know that he did lose a ball a couple times, and that may frustrate some people, but this is what you get. I mean, he is so exciting. He missed the goal opportunity. I wish he would have had that because I would have really given him confidence going into Tuesday's match. But, man, it is great to see him back because against Man U, they're not going to know what hit him, especially with the Suarez-Messi-Dembele lineup going forward. The other person too, Malcolm. I mean, Malcolm is just, he hustles, man. My mom would love him.
Yes.
My mom would love him, you know, just hustling all over. And the other thing too, which I like that he does often, especially in the ends of games, is that he kind of baits the defense to kind of go midfield. So he gives himself a lot of cushion behind so that midfielders can do like a long ball or a through ball that he can run onto. I don't know if you noticed that. Next time, check it out because he does that really well. He kind of pushes in and then releases out, which is really nice. And defenders, especially in the 85th minute, just cannot keep up with him.
Yeah.
Now, he had an opportunity. It went off the post. It was a nice shot. It was a nice shot. As we talked about him compared to Coutinho, Malcolm is always looking to score. That's part of his repertoire, and he was unlucky with that. And the other person, obviously, was Wagyu. I was really impressed with him, especially his debut. The way he was able to link up with Todibo and also Dembele up front. We have a lot of speed in the Barca B ranks and on the bench, which is, a lot of teams don't have that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you say, if you're not recruiting speed, you're chasing it.
No doubt. And, you know, like I tell you, Brian, like I was never the fastest player in football, but man, the one thing that I always got nervous against other teams is they were super fast just because, you know, throughout the match, it's just going to wear you out, you know. And Dembele now, especially against Manchester, you know, you're going to have Messi diving left. Hopefully Dembele will be on the right side, and hopefully we'll get some more goals that way. But it's really nice to have Dembele back for sure.
Oh, yeah, it's great to have him back. And speaking of having Dembele back, let's shift to the Champions League because he'll probably almost certainly be back in Champions League action this coming week. Last Wednesday, we were in Manchester, and well, you and I were in Madrid watching this game together, which was also fun. So we got to watch two games together, one live, one on TV. We went to a nice little cafeteria around the corner from your apartment and watched this game. It was the quarterfinals, first leg in the Champions League at Old Trafford, and we won 1-0 on an own goal But the play itself that led to the own goal was all Barcelona. The only thing that we didn't actually get was the credit. Suarez didn't get the credit for the goal at the end, but the play itself was all Barcelona. So what are your main talking points for this match?
So the first thing I have is, you know, as we were joking around when we were watching it, you know, it's just everything is fine, you know? you know, again, the tone of the game for me just felt unimportant, you know? I don't know if it was the overall body language of the team or whatnot, but after we got that early goal, I just felt like we were on cruise control from the onset.
Yeah, because we got that goal in the 12th minute.
Exactly. And you and I were talking more about your trip to Spain during this match, during actually watching the match. So that should kind of tell you just kind of where our heads were, because, you know, even though Barcelona had the possession, you know, in this match, they had 66% possession. But man, Brian, they didn't do anything, man. They didn't do anything. They had a total of 6 shots with 3 shots on goal, and they were just going side to side. And I guess that's it's one way to look at it, that, you know, by having this possession and not doing anything, Manchester United could not counter and score. So I get that. But man, I just think there's an easier way to go about this where we could have been more aggressive and just put this game away on ice.
I agree. Although, strangely, Manchester did not have a single shot on goal in this match.
They did not. I mean, again, it's attributed to our possession, but also to their lack of attacking as well. You know, just unable to get close. But man, I just want to see more goals. You know, we were joking around when we saw the Valverde video on the sideline where he had the tie loose and he was stressing out all across the plays, you know, and we were just laughing because we were saying there's an easier way to stress less.
Yeah.
Score more goals we go through and that's it.
Exactly. But so what also, how was this is the thing that we keep coming back to, particularly this year, the right side. What was going on in the right side in this match?
I mean, it's just so lonely, Brian.
Yeah.
It's so lonely. I mean, the right side just wants to play, you know, just wants to play with Messi and others, you know, but it's just ignored in the playground. But again, we've talked about this all season and it's nothing new. When I looked at the heat map preparing for this episode today, you should see it, man. It's just all red, middle to the left, you know,
wow,
with no chance of attacking on the right, you know. And again, I understand what's happening, you know. It's not rocket science, and I understand what Valverde is doing with this lineup. Again, but as we harp on, I don't understand why Coutinho's in there, because he provides nothing. And if you put either Sergio Roberto, Alenia, Malcolm, any of these players, I guarantee that we would have had more scoring opportunities, because they would have linked up play better, or, as in Malcolm's case, they would have looked to shoot on target more.
Yeah, but it's also worth mentioning that, you know, it was the away leg. We got the away goal. And Valverde didn't lose. In fact, he won. So in a two-leg format, you know, we didn't concede a goal, got an away goal. And playing at home in the next leg should give us the advantage because of spacing in the Camp Nou. It's much bigger. With Dembélé back in the lineup, he should give us the balance and speed that we have been missing.
That's true. I mean, if we put Dembélé on the left, he's still going to try shots on goal, but also he'll take everything to the touchline. And also his ability to be so dangerous on the counter on the left side. And then if we put him on the right side, that opens up things for Messi and Suarez even more, because then Dembélé will attack that right side to spread that defense thin. So again, having Dembélé back is huge, because that also means Coutinho is not going to play. And also we're just more formidable in attacking. So Manchester United better look out this Tuesday night, because I think we're going to be full throttle, especially with Dembélé back. He's going to be looking for some goals, especially since he didn't score against Huesca. So I'm excited to see just a little bit more teeth in the attacking, and then hopefully we'll be able to advance further to the Champions League.
Yeah. Now, what do you think the chances are that Valverde might play a lineup similar to the one he did against Huesca in this Manchester United, the second leg?
I don't see that happening, just because there's just too many things that can go wrong. I think if anything, he would go 4-4-2 as opposed to a 3, you know, 5-2, something like this. The flexibility in the match against Huesca, because they are a lower tier team in La Liga, he was able to you know, gamble with that formation. But, you know, this is too important. You just can't have anything go wrong, because we would be out. You know, there's no second chances. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
With the La Liga, lead, we're able to kind of gamble with players and rotation a bit more. But with this match against Manchester United, you know, I don't take them lightly, but at the same time, we should, especially with Dembele in the lineup and the way I know we can play on a given night, we should be able to handle Manchester United pretty soundly.
Yeah. Now, I got to tell you, when I was at the Barcelona airport getting ready to fly back home, I picked up a couple of newspapers. And I know that you get the papers every day. Mm. But I picked up a couple of papers. I got Sport and Mundo Deportivo. Mm-hmm. And I forget which one had this graphic, but it was also right on FC Barcelona's website. So I can't imagine where these newspapers got it. But it was a breakdown, a pass-by-pass breakdown of the one goal. And it's a really impressive graphic because if you follow it, it's like you were there. It lays out who passed to whom. So it shows the order of the passes and the positions of the players when the passes happened. And the goal starts with Ter Stegen, and it gradually works its way up the field, then back a little bit, but then forward again. All 11 players were involved. It was 48 passes in the space of just over 2 minutes. Suarez was the only one who only had one touch. If you look at the graphic, just about everyone, especially people like Arthur, Coutinho, Messi, Busquets, Rakitic, they all get multiple touches. Semedo had multiple touches in there. But then Suarez, he just has that final shot. But aside from him, everyone was really involved in this match, and it's a really fun graphic. Did you happen to see it?
I did. I mean, it's just, again, this is a thing of beauty, right? I mean, this is the thing. It's masterclass football at its highest form, because when you string along more than 20 passes, that's like a reason to celebrate, you know?
Yeah.
And to be able to do 40, continue with possession, but also just incrementally just keep moving up the field as though it doesn't seem like you're moving up the field is another advantage to this type of passing, right? And of course, you know, Suarez just needs the one touch where he head the ball in for the goal, essentially. And again, it's a thing of beauty because, Brian, this is really hard to replicate. This is obviously the ideal scenario that you would like to do. You start with Ter Stegen, you end it with Suarez with a goal.
Yeah, or, you know, in this case, an own goal.
But yeah, well.
We talked about that a lot because it was originally attributed to Suarez, and then eventually after halftime, they changed it to an own goal. And we were trying to talk about, like, how they decide that, you know, how do you know it's an own goal or not? And essentially, the ball was not necessarily on its own trajectory from Suarez's head headed into goal. It was because of the deflection off of Shaw that it actually went into goal. So that's why it wound up being an own goal. And it's a bummer because Suarez has not scored in the Champions League in some time. And it was initially, at least, really encouraging to think, oh, well, you know, he can get some confidence out of that. He scored in Champions League again. But, I mean, you know, he basically did it.
Yeah, he basically did. I'm not worried about Suarez.
Like, if I were him, I would still feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, it's basically his goal. You know, his action created that goal. And I'm not worried about him, especially because on the goal run that he's on right now and the goals that he's producing as well. So, you know, obviously it would be nice because I would break that kind of drought that he had on away Champions League matches. But again, I'm not worried. I really hope, Brian, on Tuesday night that, you know, Barca goes after it right from the minute, you know, first 5 minutes or so, and just puts a goleada on them, because that's what I want to see. It's been a while since we've seen that, you know, and I also just want Messi to have an outstanding performance against Manchester United. So everyone's talking about it again, because, you know, here in Madrid, Brian, they're calling this, if Barcelona wins the triplete, they're calling this the triplete at low cost.
What does that mean?
It just means because Real Madrid's not in any of the competitions, it doesn't have the same value.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because, you know, do you know how here we have low-cost airlines?
Right.
Right? So they're equating this triplete, if we complete it, to a triplete low cost.
Well, like, that's not our fault.
That's what I said. And that's the thing. I mean, that's the point of view that we're talking about, right? Because, you know, after the performance against Manchester United, you know, Messi, he wasn't superstar galactic like he can be, but he didn't have to be, right? And we got the result. And that's what I, you know, sometimes when the spotlight is on the team, I really just wish, you know, I'd like to see that Messi just takes that and just, you know, because everyone always talking the comparison with Ronaldo and him, but also from the Madridista point of view, it's like, Messi was just so-so. He's not the greatest player.
Yeah, but they're always going to feel that way.
Yeah,
that's just That's just their thing.
But you know what sounds nice is a hat trick against Manchester United at home in Champions
League. That sounds very nice. Like this, you know? and a brilliant free kick, a cuchara, and some unexpected right-footed shot on the run.
There you go. A Messi hat trick, right?
Yeah. So 4-0, Messi gets a hat trick, Suarez gets one.
There you go.
That's what I'm projecting.
I'm on board. Yes. The last thing I just have really quick, you know, especially against this match against Huesca, people on Twitter were just going crazy about losing points and so forth. Again, we cannot win every match. We're fine. You know, we still got the league. But remember, this is all part of the experience, right? Thank God we're not a team like, for example, Betis, you know, that the only thing they have to play for is the Sevilla Derby and then lose it. Okay. We're in all three matches. All the other teams are good. Everyone just calm down, relax, enjoy the ride.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's always a hope that you can seal up the league as soon as possible. But again, you look at the schedule we have coming up. We could afford to take that draw. We could afford to just get 1 point instead of three. And especially, again, with Champions League heating up, we're in a very good position. And we're only really competing with Atletico. One thing that I'm not afraid of with Valverde, for all of our complaints about him, I'm not worried about him letting it go. Yeah, right, kind of like what happened with Luis Enrique, where it's like I still remember that loss to Malaga that lost us the league. I'm like, what? Yeah. But yeah. That's one nice thing about Valverde. I'm never worried about that. Like, he will get a result.
I agree with you. Because La Liga, I'm comfortable with how he runs it, so we'll be fine with that. It's the Champions League that I'm still worried. Hopefully we can get through this. Again, I'm excited for the match on Tuesday. I think we will win and advance. But I just want to see, especially, I know it's going to be much easier with Dembele in there, because if he's on the left, we look good, and if he's on the right, even better. But Coutinho's not going to be playing, and that for me is happy days.
Yeah. Now, actually, this makes me think of one other final thing, because we've seen this in Copa del Rey. We've seen this in Champions League, at least so far in the knockout rounds, such as they are, that Valverde does tend to be more conservative and cautious with both his lineups and the tactics that he has the team play in the first leg, and then they come out a little bit stronger in the second leg. So do you think, I mean, it's becoming a real recognizable pattern, so it can't be an accident. I mean, again, for all of our complaints about Valverde, he's certainly no dummy. So do you think that that this is by design? And if so, what do you think the motivation is for it? I have a hypothesis, but I'm wondering if you have one.
No, I just think that, you know, he's never really been at this level in his managerial career, right? So last year was the debut for him at this type of level, where you're in all competitions, you're expected to win, you have such a talented team. And I think he's learned a little bit. Obviously, I would hope that, you know, throughout the season there was more rotation, just to continue those minutes, and also to help nurture the growth of the young players that we have. But I would agree that the away, he's going to be ultra conservative, because he'd rather have the advantage, especially coming home, knowing that the space in the Camp Nou is going to help with more goals. And, you know, as we talk about in Champions League, the most important thing is not to have any goals against you and get some away goals. And we've done that against Lyon, and in Manchester.
Right. Well, okay, here's my hypothesis as to why he's been handling the knockout tournaments this way. What was the single most disappointing thing from last season?
Roma.
Exactly. And what?
Not the movie, the game.
Right. The movie was great. The game that we lost to Roma. And why was it so disappointing?
Yeah, because we had the lead.
Exactly. Do you think that he's actually kind of trying to not have a big lead from the first leg so that the second leg, the stakes feel higher?
Could be.
As a motivational technique.
Could be. But the other thing too, Lyon and Manchester, we played away first. You know, so that's the difference as well. In Roma, we played home first, and then we went to Rome on the second leg. So there could be some credence to it. But I think more it's just the situation of playing away first, which is always going to be more difficult, which is the way I prefer. I prefer playing away first and having the home back.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's just worked out. But there could be some credence. But again, we're chugging along. I just hope that we just open up on Tuesday night.
Yes, yes. And next week, we'll be able to review whatever happens on Tuesday night, as well as La Liga action against Real Sociedad. You'll hear from us then. Thanks to Max Bleuer this week. This has been a production of Barca Talk, written by Gabriel Quiroga and Brian Henderson, editing by Brian Henderson, music by Brian Henderson and Johannes Brahms, social media and promotion by 2.go. Support the show through Patreon at barcatalk.net, and until next time, Visca Barca!